junior, senior year, and then the 2 years after school, like I was out of the country 8 months a year, bopping around the world with a camera in hand, not making money that I could sit here and brag to you about, but it's like, who cares about the money? I'm getting paid to go to the coolest places on the planet. Like, there's so many kids that are trying to get into this content creation world that I meet with all the time, and they're always like, hey, how much do you charge? How do you charge? And I'm like, hey, look, I'll tell you, and I'll be super honest with you. Like, if you come take my client, heck yeah. Good for you. It means you're doing better work than me. That's capitalism. Like, that's awesome. And I'm
I love
super
that attitude, man. That's nuts.
Yeah, but I'm super honest with him, because like nobody was ever honest with me getting into this. I just had to stumble forward. But I'm like, if money is your goal, this isn't necessarily the best industry to be in. But if you want experience and to meet really amazing people and then build opportunity from there, that's the best way to do it.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to The Creative Brief. Today, I've got a great conversation with my good buddy, Knox Cronenberg, an adventure photographer and storyteller from Austin, Texas. Now, Knox has worked with all the big outdoor brands you love and is about to take his art to the next level with some of the most insane photography you have ever seen. This episode is a blast, and I am excited you're here for it. I'm Brian Athey, and this is The Creative Brief.
All right, we're going to let it rip. What's up, Noxie? How are you, bud?
Dude, better than I deserve. Blessed to be here. Blessed to be talking to you.
I still remember the first time that I met you, and I think you said the exact same thing. You said, like, better than I deserve. Blessed to be here.
I don't know if it's a life motto or something I live by, but I feel like there's a lot of unhappy people in the world, and my goal is to just be the happiest person in every room. Sometimes I fail, but most of the time I can usually strike up some energy. It's the goal.
I'm so excited you're on, man. Thank you for taking the time between all the adventures to come by the podcast and say what's up. I've been wanting to have you on for a long time because I'm obsessed with your photography and everything that you do. But like I said before, I'm kind of addicted to the energy. So every time you're around, like, I just feel better. And so thanks for gracing this, man. I'm super excited.
Hell yeah, man. I'm happy to be here. You're crushing it. I'm so stoked to see you on this new endeavor and be a part of it and hopefully be helpful in any kind of way I can. I mean, it's awesome to see where it's started and where it's going, and just glad to be here.
I think this is like 14 episodes in, which means 14 weeks. And like I was telling you before, like, I've recorded a couple that can't go up, and right, I skipped a week. But every week I kind of learn something different, and it gets bigger and better, and people reach out, and it's been such a blessing, man. Like, I've really, really enjoyed the experience and getting to talk to people, you know?
Totally. I mean, what a cool way to create and do unique things and talk to unique people. I mean, I feel like this platform is such a unique way to get more out of people and kind of dive deep and with intention, but also kind of be able to share that with a broader audience. You know, you're having conversations with people that most people never get to converse with, and you're getting to share it with a platform. So that's super cool.
Well, you do it in a very different way. And I want you to set us up a little bit with, I guess, I don't know 100% what you do. I know the world that you live in, and I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't know how to put a job title on it, because I'll talk to you some weeks and you're like on top of a mountain, and then I'll talk to you some weeks and you're out in the desert, and then I'll talk to you some weeks and you're out on some like fly fishing adventure. But how did all this start, man? How did you become a lifestyle adventure photographer? Or is that even what you call it? Like, tell me what you do. How do you put yourself into an elevator pitch?
The best way to explain where I've got is, or how I've gotten here, is my life has just been a natural progression of passion. Is kind of the simplest way to explain it. I'm incredibly blessed and lucky to be born not only in America, but in Austin, in this geographically blowing up city. So there's all kinds of unique individuals here that I get to connect with. And for me, being in the outdoor industry, like, Yeti kind of started this movement in Austin that has brought thousands and thousands of jobs, but also brands and all these other unique opportunities here for me to be able to work within and around.
So I think you got to go back to set me up, like, when you were in school, like in high school, you were a student, but you were also like, you were already into chasing these passions when you were a kid, right?
Yeah. So kind of the outdoor, I was introduced to the outdoors by my dad. And when I was really young, I fell in love with the idea of being outside. Like, video games were never a part of my life. staying inside was never a part of my life. It was like, how can I maximize time outside? From sunup to sundown, it was like, I wanted to be outside. And that kind of evolved into, I love bass fishing. Like in high school, it was, I'm going to be the world's best bass fisherman. And we started the bass fishing team for our high school. And a buddy of mine went and fished in the state tournament.
You started the team? Is that right?
Yeah, we started it for our high school here in Austin.
Every time I've ever told anybody about you, I was like, he was on the fishing team in high school. I think that's right. And they're like, can't be. There's no such thing as a fishing team. Like you started it.
So we started the high school bass fishing team, which is all conventional fishing. And it was awesome. And we got second in state, lost by 2 ounces. And that summer going into my sophomore year, I kind of got bit by this fly fishing bug. And then that when that fly fishing bug bit me, it was like, that's it.
Yeah,
it was my drugs, my alcohol, it was the wake up moment. Everything.
Yeah.
And it was, I have this really severe problem in life to where I either give you 150% or zero. Mm-hmm. And school pretty much got zero throughout my career. But fly fishing at that point was taking every ounce of time, energy, and brain capacity I had. And there's a really good buddy of mine who was 4 years older than me in school. His name's Noah Thompson, who kind of led me and showed me a really unique path within this fly fishing world and opened some really awesome doors for me and introduced me to some really cool people that basically it allowed me to go compete on the U.S. youth fly fishing team, which was the door opener of all door openers for me.
So you got to travel the world.
Yeah, getting to see parts of the world that I never thought I'd get to see, going and doing TV shows with people I never thought I'd get to do. And that,
you're 15, 16, 17, 18, like your high school age.
Totally. Yeah. Literally in high school, all my buddies are, you know, going to school every day and I'm trying to figure out how to ditch school and go fishing and then learn all these. Because the interesting thing about the U.S. team is it's all trout fishing and there's not really trout fishing in Texas. Like you have the Guadalupe River, which is all stocked fish. Mm-hmm. So it's not a technical fishery. So I'd have to fly to these locations to learn and get to educated on how to fish, how to read the water, how to do all these things. And that was kind of like my first exposure into this outdoor industry, if you will. Mm-hmm. I guess to backtrack a few steps at this time, and then also in middle school, I actually worked for Yeti, which has kind of become a calling card that helps open doors for me. Well, I was Yeti's first ever intern. Like when the whole company was, yeah.
That was back when it was just like the two guys out in are they in Dripping? Or they're in, where are they?
So they started in Driftwood.
Driftwood.
Yeah, but no, it was one office. It was the warehouse to office. There was like 10 employees, maybe. I can't even remember how many employees. I was in seventh grade. I would work there in the summer putting together parts in the warehouse. Like my dad was like, you're going to work. And I said, yes, sir.
Yeah. What a place though. Like, did you know it was lightning in a bottle then? Or was it just
It was literally, it was like, we're wearing, it was, I remember thinking to myself, huh, this is really interesting. I'm wearing a hat that I think is really cool that represents a cooler company. Who would have ever thought I'd wear a hat that represents a cooler company? You know, that doesn't make any sense.
Nobody's wearing ice chest gear at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like nobody had a hat that said Igloo on it or Lifetime or whatever the other products were at the time.
Right.
But they've created this cult brand and this cult identity that everybody wants to be a part of. And it was really cool. And the two founders of Yeti have been unbelievably great to me and gracious to me throughout my kind of career in the beginning of my career. And I actually kind of worked for one of them all through high school, helping with all kinds of different stuff, which was also super, super educational. And my life literally has just been a natural progression of passion, but also me stumbling into these incredible blessings. And
right place at the right time.
Right place, right time. Totally. Yeah, 100%.
What's up, everybody? It's Brian. Look, I've got a great episode coming up next week with Hunter Hammonds. We'll be talking all about the insane next chapter for Assembly, and you don't want to miss it. So hit the subscribe button and get back to the episode.
What does the book of business look like right now? Like who all are you totally jumping around with in Austin right now?
So to kind of backtrack a little bit, traveling with the U.S. team, with doing all this other stuff in high school, made me fall in love with the idea of photography. When I got to school in college, I had certain brands that were sponsoring me just because of the U.S. team and traveling, and all of them needed content. And it basically came to this point where they were giving me all this free product for content. And I was like, this is awesome. I don't have to pay for all this shit anymore. Like, hell yeah. Like,
give it to me. And then I got to the point where I was like, all right, I've got too much shit. Like, y'all are sending me all this product. It's awesome. I don't have a use for all of it. I need money now. And there was this really cool advertising agency in South Carolina that actually ended up being the first person that ever hired me. And they gave me a summer internship my freshman year. And I went and lived in Charleston, South Carolina. And we took a boat from the Keys all the way to Charleston and fly fished the whole way and photographed and filmed the whole thing. And it was kind of like this second eye-opening moment for me where it was like, I can use this little box and press buttons and make a living. Like, whoa, holy shit.
Where did you pick up the technical know-how? Were you just kind of making it up as you went? YouTube?
Yeah, literally YouTube college. Yeah. Like while I was in college, I literally remember being in my freshman dorm room going to, you know, business classes and all this and being like, oh, this is boring as shit. And then going home and spending like hours and hours and hours watching YouTube videos and learning how this little box worked. Because that was it. I was like, this is like when I said I'm a super, super addictive person. Uh-huh. And that's why I've always been so thankful. Like, it's just a total God thing that he in my mind, he knew that if my identity was drugs and alcohol, I was going to be better at drugs and alcohol than you. Right. So he gave me fly fishing in the outdoors because he's like, you can never be the best at this. Go chase this forever and ever.
There you go.
Yeah. And it will keep you alive, hopefully.
And it will keep you. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, like, you would think so, except that these are not the safest environments that you're hanging off boats and like you're in the back of, on the back of snowmobiles and snowcats and stuff. You know, it's like,
oh, totally.
If when I say adventure photographer, that's the best way to describe it. Like you have, I don't know. What are the brand deals like? Like, what do they know of you and say, like, you know, you've got to come take this for us. Like, what do they see or what do they want you to go do?
Great question. Honestly, one of the pitches that I had for the longest time to work with brands was there's so many great photographers and content creators and creators out there that can tell a story really well. My value add to the fly fishing world, which is kind of where I started, was, hey, I know how to do this really good on the other side of the camera. And I also know how to do it really good on this side of the camera. So I can tell the story accurately to portray your brand. Whereas we could bring, you know, anybody else in here, somebody that works for any other brand that knows how to use the camera, but they may not know how to tell this fly fishing story and show this product accurately and correctly, which was always kind of my leg up. Like, brands in the outdoor industry would hire me because I could speak the language correctly that they're trying to portray to their audience.
That is so wise to say that, because I think back. So when we would do brand photography and I would go through things with you, you'd be like, we can't use that one. You're like, that's a great shot. Why not? You would say like, boots are wrong, or he's not holding the shotgun right. Or that's not how you would point out these little details about the authenticity of the shot. You're like, anybody who knows who's worth their weight, like, they know that that's not right. And so if you're trying to appeal to these enthusiasts, these people that really know what they're talking about, then all those details matter. And so often you would show me an ad or you'd pull something up, you'd be like, I don't want to buy from them, or I don't trust them, or they're not right because of whatever it was, whatever the saddle is on the horse, or however he's totally. Like, however the horse is behaving, or all these little details that you would notice. Like, where did you pick up all that stuff?
Man, details matter, I think, is kind of the premise of what we're both saying. And like, you've seen it, founders are picky as shit about what they want their brand to be. And it's their heart, right? Like, it's the product they've either created or funded, and that brand that is the selling point and the catalyst to moving product is their heart. And it's like, I guess the best way to say it would be, it's vulnerable for them, and they want somebody that they can trust that understands how they think and understands the brand that they want to represent. Totally. Because it's hard for a lot of these founders to say, hey, they can say, hey, I want Yeti. Great. Yeti costs a shitload of money and a ton of effort and tends like a couple decades. You know, that's awesome. Let's start here first by being honest, true, identifying who we are. What's our purpose? Why are we doing this? I think it really just comes down to the fact that details matter, and that these brands want to make sure that if they're selling a premium product in the fly fishing space, in the outdoor space, in the whatever space outside, that the people that are buying their product, yes, there's going to be people that buy their product that may not see the fly line is tied on wrong or whatever, but the fly fishing guide that you want bought in that could be your best salesman, even if he's unpaid, just to be a validator for you, needs to see that it's well thought through and it's created well with intention. And there's somebody sitting there going, okay, that's good shit.
That's good shit. What is the relationship? Like, how do you nurture those relationships, I guess? Like, how are you meeting these people? And then, like, how are you relating to them on a way that they want to hire you for these big gigs?
For me, it's always been, sales has kind of taken a backseat. It's just been, be as nice and helpful as possible in the short term. And if good things are supposed to happen, good things will happen. Just like the biggest thing in this world, I think in every single endeavor people take business-wise is like your reputation. And I've been in this industry since I was literally 14. So yeah. I have fucked some stuff up. Like there's some people that are like, Knox is an idiot. You know, it's like, that's okay.
They're right. Yeah.
They are fully validated in their opinions. Like, I have totally messed some shit up. But the goal ultimately has always been treat my clients well, treat the people who work with me as best as I can, and be more helpful than I am getting paid to be doing. Like that's like over deliver, under promise is kind of the goal.
Yeah, I feel like that's the wild thing is because I don't know if there's anybody you don't know. I mean, it would be like, oh, we need to put on a dove hunt. Oh, there's this ranch out in West Texas, but there's also this other ranch if y'all really want to go crazy. Or what we could do, we could like, if y'all want to go international, it's like, it's weird the connections that you've been able to make, but none of them seem very strained. It's like, maybe that's why people are so like comfortable around you and relate to you is because you're not approaching it in like tactically, like you need to sell them something, but that you're really just putting the relationship first.
I appreciate you saying that. And I've tried really hard not to be tactical about it. There's definitely some approach to where in my mind, I'm like, hey, I want to work with these people in the long term. You know, what do I have to do to get there in the future? But I think ultimately what it comes down to is Mother Nature is the greatest equalizer. It doesn't care if you have $1 billion or $1. And then when you share an experience outside, hunting, fishing, camping, surfing, rock climbing, whatever it is, you tend to have, I don't know if it's a chemical bond, but a bond that's much deeper than if you and I were just to do a phone call, right? Yeah. So those relationships that I have with all these people have been curated through outdoor experience.
Experience, yeah.
Which comes and creates really natural.
Well, anybody that's ever been on a hunting trip knows that there's a bond with the people that you go 100%. With yeah. that is way different than that. Like you get to be really close really quick whenever you go out and do one of these big hunts or a big fishing trip. And you said, I mean, you do things like you just said, like go from the Keys to Charleston, South Carolina. Like you're on a boat with somebody for a little while or for a couple of days and like y'all are best buddies, whether you mean to or not.
100%. Yeah. Or worst enemies. Like that's the cool thing. Like there's certain things where people can hide and put up a facade. But when you go hunt in Alaska for 12 days straight, like if the client doesn't like you, they're definitely not going to like you at the end. And like nobody wants to spend time with a dickhead for 12 days.
I was going to say, how do you manage those situations where you go out and like, you know, you're stuck in a blind or something with just like awkward people, you know, like
it gets so awkward. Yeah. It gets so awkward. But I mean, you just got to love, like, I think it comes back to, super lucky to love what I do. And yeah. I really, really just love being outside as is. Mm-hmm. So even if there may not be the best person, which is so rare, but even if it's not the best person, it's like, I'm just happy to be out here. And most of the time, the locations that I'm getting to shoot in are incredibly beautiful. And if you're going to be unhappy in Mexico when you're fishing in crystal clear water, like screw off, dude. Like look, open your eyes. Look how beautiful this is.
So, I mean, you really do keep like the passion part of it, the passion, but like the, you know, getting to be outside and going on these trips, like that's what fostered this love for photography. And you figured out how to parlay that into daily work that is super fulfilling and fun and challenging every day. What are some of the brands that you've worked with? Just so I know,
oh man,
I know Yeti and I know I always mess up the name of this. Bio.
Oh, Bahio. Yeah.
Bahio, the sunglasses.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Yeti, Bahio kind of pulled me out of a sweet, awesome funk. Like they were the only brand that was willing to travel and do shit during COVID. And I was one of the only photographers that was like, yeah, I'll go to Mexico. Let's do it. Sure. Yeah. You need me to wear a mask on the plane. Cool. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
No, I mean, there's all kinds of brands, Yeti, Bahio, Howler Brothers, all, let's think about Howler, this.
Yep, that's right.
Seaholm watches, Pecos Outdoor, Poncho Outdoor. It's a bunch of different outdoor brands that we've
you fall into the sweet spot. Like if you're opening up an outdoor brand in Austin, like if they don't know you already, somebody almost always refers you. Like you fall into these situations that are just so cool. Do you work with the Turtle Box guys too? I've
got we've done a ton of work with them. Yeah. They're fantastic guys. It's interesting. I like to say I'm geographically blessed. And I think Yeti kind of started it to where they made Austin and specifically Texas kind of like this mecca for outdoor brands. I mean, there's 10 or 12 brands that I can name off the top of my head that are based in Texas now, where 15 years ago, that wasn't really a thing. And it's been really cool for me to get to work with a lot of these guys. The Turtle Box guys are fantastic. Sims people are fantastic. Costa was fantastic. Like there's so many of these awesome brands that we've gotten to do work with and travel for. And it's just really cool.
Well, I was going to ask you, because you like Yeti is a good example. You're kind of there for like the R&D of that. Like, do you ever get to provide feedback? Do you ever get to work with the founding teams and stuff like that to like perfect the products?
At Yeti, I was too young, but at a lot of these other brands that we work with, yeah, absolutely. That's always kind of been my pitch, Brian, is like, hey, the brand you want to create is the lifestyle I live every day. Mm-hmm. Give me your product to either give you feedback or go create content for you of your product in its natural habitat. Because I've tried to unapologetically live this life of chasing this outdoor love of mine. And it's just been really awesome. Like for in college, we started this production company with a buddy of mine, Luke. And it was truly, I never had these like huge monetary goals with it. It was always just, this is my avenue to see the world before I have real responsibility as an adult. And I junior, senior year, and then the 2 years after school, like I was out of the country 8 months a year, bopping around the world with a camera in hand, not making money that I could sit here and brag to you about, but it's like, who cares about the money? I'm getting paid to go to the coolest places on the planet. Like there's so many kids that are trying to get into this outdoor, not outdoor, but content creation world that I meet with all the time. And they're always like, hey, how much do you charge? How do you charge? And I'm like, hey, look, I'll tell you, and I'll be super honest with you. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit. Like if you come take my client, heck yeah. Good for you. It means you're doing better work than me. That's capitalism. Like that's awesome. And I'm
I love
super
that attitude, man. That's nuts.
Yeah, but I'm super honest with them. Cause like nobody was ever honest with me getting into this. I just had to stumble forward. But I'm like, if money is your goal, this isn't necessarily the best industry to be in, but if you want experience and to meet really amazing people and then build opportunity from there, that's the best way to do it. It's a fantastic way. Because there is money in this creative content creation world. You just have to figure out the avenues through trial and error that are best suited for your skill sets to actually go make a difference and make an impact at a company.
And there's not a founder in the world that wants to part with their money, especially to somebody who is like, who's not all in. You know, every single founder that I work with, they're most impressed by that I'm going to over deliver work ethic. It's not always about the product, but it's about actually their experience working with you, right?
It's energy, attitude, and respect. Like if you have those three things in abundance, you will get more clients, even if your work isn't the best, because these founders and these marketing directors want to work with people that they enjoy talking to. Like if I'm going to create a whole ad campaign or all this, do this giant shoot for you and go live in Belize and we're going to make a film for 60 days. Like you don't want the person doing that to be someone you don't enjoy talking to, especially in the post-processing process, because that sucks.
Yeah.
Like it's no fun. You're like, shit, man.
Yeah. So you're still, you'll do the photography, but you're also putting together these big stories too, right? Like you like the big Yeti present style content, like that's your bread and butter.
We've done it. Yeah. And it's been awesome. There's not that many clients that need it anymore because it doesn't move the needle as much for people anymore. It's just hard to get eyeballs that we've found. Mm-hmm. I mean, Meta and everything is just pushing so much UGC and vertical iPhone video. And like, it's really funny. You do this $20,000 shoot, you know, and you have the $50,000, $70,000 worth of camera gear and you get there. And then the client's like, hey, by the way, do you think maybe sort of kind of like you could get some iPhone footage?
I was going to ask about that. Like where, how have y'all adapted to like the short form world? I mean, what's your approach to that?
To be totally honest, my approach has been to back away from the production world.
and figure out other ways to provide value for clients and social media management, email, all these kind of different realms, more of like a marketing business way to do it. I think there's still a ton of value add. I think the biggest way we provide value now is having these young guys that work for us that can go get you the stuff you need. And it's not this crazy high end level, because really all it is every brand needs content. Every brand needs more and more and more and more and more content every day. Mm-hmm. And it needs to get cheaper, man. And it's literally like I tell people all the time, because there's all these photographers and content creators that are old school that are getting pissed off at the younger generation for doing it cheaper. And maybe it's worse, but it's like, that's capitalism, man. Yeah. Like if you're not willing to either go cheaper and faster, it's like, I hope you have a clientele base that's wanting to spend more money, because it's just getting cheaper across the board and having to figure out how to do that. Hopefully one day it comes back and it's like, we want this high-end content again, but it's definitely in a different world than it was.
Well, speaking of the high-end stuff, I think that's what I'm super excited to talk to you about, is that you've like, over the last year, you've really been making this transition into a more artistic approach.
Like I said, my life has been a natural progression and passion. Mm-hmm. And I try and take really introspective looks into what makes me happy. For a very long time, traveling and seeing the world was the most fulfilling thing ever. And creating content was the way to do it. And it got to the point where the travel was really awesome, but the content creation wasn't scratching a creative itch for me. And I did some really deep dives in myself and was like, what makes me happy? And is there a business within that I can do it to where it's like a 1-2 punch? It makes me super happy and it makes me money, right? Because like at the end of the day, money is a necessary evil. We got to figure out ways to make money. Gotcha. Like that's why we're all doing it. It's necessary. The goal is hopefully you do something that makes you really happy and it makes you money. And the natural evolution of that was fine art photography. There's a few different photographers. There's this guy named Sebastião Salgado, who's this Brazilian guy who's created some of the most incredible iconic black and white imagery of all time. There's another photographer, Nick Brandt, who's another black and white incredible photographer. And then there's a photographer, David Yarrow. And these guys are selling their photos anywhere from $10,000 to $100,000 a piece. I'm looking at these photos and I'm going, holy shit, like maybe I can't create as good as they can, but like I can create some stuff that tells a story like these images. Yeah. And that's
And you can get to some places that can capture them. You can build those relationships. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Well, it's all about relationships and it's all about creating an image that tells a story. What I always tell my collectors is it's really, really easy to create a photo that's cool. There's 8 billion photographers in the world now because everybody who has a phone is a photographer. It's really, really hard to tell a photo or create a photo that tells a story that pulls at your heartstrings, right? Because the whole reason people buy art, I think there's 3 to 4 reasons. The first is it's provocative. You like to look at it, right? Mm-hmm. Like something about it makes your eyes go, whoa. Yeah. The second is the brand of the artist. And then the third is the story. The story is, in my opinion, the most important.
The most powerful.
The most powerful. Nobody buys anything they don't necessarily need without knowing the story or wanting to be a part of it, right? A brand and story kind of go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. But for me, since I have this production background, I'm trying to create these pieces that have the story element built in so that they build my brand in turn.
Well, we're going to try and show some of this stuff for anybody. Oh, yeah, please. But before you do, I want you to tell the first story you ever told me. I want you to recount for me.
Please.
Might have been like the first time that I met you and you had just kind of run into this guy, and the resulting photo I'm not going to tell. We'll show it in just a second, but this is the bridge photo that you took. Talk to me about the actual story of how that came to be.
So my goal within this is to create real relationships. That is the end all be all goal, whether it's the collector or the people within the photos. And that's always been my goal. And so I was walking on South Congress, which if anybody's been to Austin, they've been on South Congress and it's this big touristy area. And a now really good buddy of mine rides his horse up and down South Congress and lets people jump on and take photos and charges them money. And that's kind of like how he makes a living.
Okay.
And I saw him and I thought he was this cowboy. I was like, holy cow, look at this guy. He's a freaking cowboy. I want to go talk to him. Maybe I could do this photo. And I literally like had this photo idea with him like right then. I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And it's going to tell the Austin story and it's going to be really cool.
and he's going to love it. And I went up to this guy and I was like, hey man, I've got this idea. I think it's going to be awesome. I like hit him with this like crazy amount of energy that he was not prepared for. And he was like, okay. No, fuck off. Like, get out of here. Literally. He was like, get out of here, man.
Get out
like,
of here, kid. Do you want to ride or not?
Yeah, like that was it. He's like, we're not doing that. No, yeah. This is a stupid idea. And so I'm not very good at taking no for an answer when I want to do something. Like when I want to make something happen, I know it's just a speed bump, you know? And so I figured out who knew this guy. I started getting in contact with him. He continued to tell me he's an Apache Native American guy. So he's an American Indian and he's this really, really awesome guy. He's a super spiritual guy. And American Indians have this weird deal with photography, to where it's kind of a cultural belief of theirs in certain tribes to where the photo kind of captures your soul and takes away
your soul. Okay. I'd heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's kind of this interesting thing to where it's hard. They don't want anybody taking a photo of them that doesn't understand, respect, and basically want to help build what they believe. Like the goal is mutual benefit.
Yeah.
Most of the time they've been photographed in history, there's been very little mutual benefit. So they they have this distrust, which is very understanding.
I guess. You're basically documenting legacy and you better understand and respect that legacy or else you're not going to get the privilege.
You're not going to get the privilege to do it. And I think working with him has been a wildly awesome lesson. But long story short, he told me, no, 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 no. He and I finally figure out where he lives. I show up at his house. We spend like 6 hours having like a eye to eye conversation. He's like, holy shit, you're dead serious about this. Yeah. This means
this
way more to
legit.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, this means way more to you than I thought it did. Let's go. He said, let's think about creating this image. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I'm a medicine man for my tribe. I lead sweat lodges at my house every Wednesday night. I want you to come do this sweat lodge with me so I know your intentions are pure and true. And only then will I say yes or no to doing the photo. I said, awesome. I'm in. Tell me when. And so I show up at his house. It's 107 degrees outside of the teepee. Okay. And a sweat lodge is basically Native American church. It's kind of the easiest way to explain it. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea is, the teepee is Mother Nature's womb. You crawl in, and when you come back out, you're reborn into the world. It takes about 3 hours. There's 4 rounds. It's fantastically difficult and awesome. And so I come in with zero. I was like, I'm going to do zero research on this.
I was about to say, did you like eat, prep, drink water? No. Like, were you ready?
I did drink a shitload of water because he told me, he's like, just make sure you drink a bunch of water. And but other than that, I knew very little what to expect because I wanted the experience to be like fully present. Yeah. Like I was like, I'm just going to succumb to this experience. And so the way it happens is they take these lava rocks that come from the volcano outside of Austin and they heat them up in a fire all day long. And then each round they put different rocks into the fire pit. And the frick, that mother sucker gets hot, man.
So like easily over 150 degrees, approaching 200, right?
If it's not, I would, and I would,
like
what, I would,
what's I've, the difference between 150 and 200? It's hot.
It's hot. It's really hot. I have no idea what the technical temperature is. I'll tell you, I do a sauna now, like weekly, like a sauna at like 190 and it feels like nothing compared to it.
Oh, wow.
But the problem is there. So the rocks come in and you're in this teepee, the teepee door closes and it's pitch black. And then they take some sagebrush and some cedar and other stuff and they burn it on there. And that's what begins the prayer. And then everybody starts chanting and singing and praying together. And it's really cool because the guy said, we don't hold the hostages here. If you need to leave the teepee, just leave when we're not praying because there's breaks in between each round. Mm-hmm. And then pray to whatever God you believe in. This is our way to connect with our God. Mm-hmm. And they pour water onto the rocks. So there's steam everywhere. And obviously the heat rises in each round. It's hard to say how long they last because it's really, really difficult.
You start to like hallucinate almost. I mean, you're totally. You're separating from space and time in this. Yeah. Pitch black, super hot, chanting. Yeah. Like it's everything that you need to hallucinate. It's all the things.
It's all there. Yeah. Everything's there. Yeah. And you can't see your hot hand in front of your face like that. And the first round I was like, holy shit, I'm going to melt and die on this teepee floor. For sure.
And you knew you had three more after that too.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And in my head, I was like, no matter what happens, even if they have to pull my melted body off, I am making it through this because I have to create this photo. Yeah. I was like, I have to create it. And
150% after, passion.
That's it. Yeah. That's it, dude. And so after that first round, we're sitting there going around. They open the teepee door. They let a little bit of air in so you can breathe a little bit, which is the greatest feeling in the world. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 105 degrees outside feels great all of a sudden. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And Samuel looks at me and he goes, "Hey, think with your heart and not your mind. Your mind is weak and your heart is strong. The only way to make it through this is if you think with your heart. Like, put all your intention and all your energy to your heart, because your mind will tell you you can't make it, but I promise you, you can."
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa. And so the other really cool thing about these sweat lodges is the goal is to come in with really intentional purpose, whether you want to heal somebody, whether you want to pray for somebody, be thankful, whatever it is, come in with intention and pray that intention the whole time. Mm-hmm. And so for me, my intention was, I want to pray and be the most grateful person in this teepee and in Austin. Like, I have been incredibly blessed my entire life. I just want to resoundingly, I guess, just like throw gratitude everywhere.
You want to embrace it. Yeah. You want to become gratitude.
That's it. Yeah. And that, like, literally, I just wanted to be like as grateful as I could be. And I was just like thanking God and thanking God and thanking God. And that was it for like the 3 hours that we were in there. And towards the end of the fourth round, where it's like, I've kind of filled my heart with gratitude. Like, I can take it a little bit better. I have these like beautiful visions and it's awesome. And it's so beautiful and like crystal clear and real. And then I'm singing along with these Apache songs that I've never heard before, knowing the words. Like, it was the craziest.
The words experience. Came to you.
Oh, dude, it was just like, like going with it. Yeah, it was you awesome. Knew it. Yeah, yeah, it was so cool. And so we come out of the teepee, and you're not allowed to walk ever in the teepee because the teepee is Mother Nature's womb. So you have to crawl. When you crawl back out, the idea is you're reborn into the world every time you do it. And we walk around the circle, and you thank every single person that was in it. And then we finally get to the end, and Sam comes out last, and he comes up to me, and he pulls me aside, and he goes, "All right, your intentions are true. Let's go create this photo.
Let's go."
Yeah. And so that was,
oh my gosh.
In honor of him, we titled the photo Gray Horse, which is his last name. And it's one of my favorite
show
photos.
Show me now you've got to show it.
Absolutely. All right.
If you're just listening, flip your phone around, because there's a video on YouTube or Spotify or wherever else you can see this thing. Knox is about to pull up his website and show us Gray Horse, because it is insane.
All right. So here's the photo titled Gray Horse, and you can see. Can you see this, Brian?
Yeah, I can. This is on your website.
Yep, this is on the website.
KnoxCronenberg.com.
Yes, sir. So this is the photo of Sam Grayhorse. He's sitting in full war paint with Austin skyline in the background. And I don't know if you can see, but he's got the Capitol here between his legs. And everybody always asks, like, how did you create this photo? Yeah. And we did it at 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning.
So this is on South Congress. Did you shut the street down?
We actually didn't shut the street down, because in Austin, they're super liberal, and you can technically in Texas ride a horse on any road under 60 mile an hour speed limit. So we just rode him out there and asked for forgiveness. The police drove by and were like, hell yeah, this is awesome.
How was there nobody on it though? There's no runners, no traffic, no nothing. How did y'all get around the traffic?
It was 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning. There was just nobody out. We were just really lucky in the summer. Everybody's sleepy in the summer.
And he's in traditional Apache wear. He's got like the war paint on with his horse.
Yep. And so it took me, he still hasn't given me what all of the symbols mean. But I do know that the hands on the horses mean, for every hand, that means that's a kill and hand to hand combat in the past, which is pretty crazy.
Authentic.
I don't think I don't think he's killed anybody. Okay. But who knows?
Well, you put this Texas traffic thing to the test as well, right? Because I called you one time for like some random something, and you were like, "Can't talk right now. I'm on the side of the road in Dallas. We're trying to shut this bridge down. I got the cops out here."
Yeah. No, literally. So that photo is actually this one right here. It's called A Texan Commute. Dallas is a little bit.
The black and white is insane too.
Like, thank you so much, man.
You've figured out a way to do black and white with so much depth and richness. It's amazing.
Well, the goal for me has always been, how do I build as much depth into an image? And I think that color sounds like it's awesome, but it's ultimately really limiting. The ability with black and white has to put you in this timeless sense to kind of, allow the viewer and the collector to put themselves at any level in time is, I think, really, really fascinating, because you could sit here and look at a black and white image and go, oh man, that's 100 years ago, or that was yesterday. There's not, yeah, there's no limit on the time constraint. Whereas color on the digital side of things is, it really can limit you, in my mind.
Totally. Well, it's definitely one of those things that you've got to know what you're doing. I mean, a lot of people can take a black and white photograph. Like you flip around your iPhone, you put the filter on, you're like, oh, I'm artistic. But like, it's so hard to do it right. Like when you look at a properly shot, properly exposed, properly developed black and white image, it's like, I can even look at this on a computer screen and you just, there's so much depth to this photo. There's so much richness in the contrast. Like, I don't know how you're getting shots like this while like, you know, I think if I remember right, like the cops had not been helpful. And then all of a sudden they said it was cool. And but they were going to block off the road at like the worst possible time. And the horse was like, there was all these things going on and you still got to get the shot. Right.
So basically the way the story goes was, we had 48 hours to get this photo. I drove up the day before. So now it's down to 12 hours to get the photo. The guy who has the horse, is the trainer of the horse, needs to leave at like 11 a.m. that day on an airline out of Dallas. So we have, basically we had a window from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. to get this photo done. Yeah. And of that time, there's only about 30 minutes of the right light that we can do it within.
Oh yeah, because you were limited by light, time of day and everything. I didn't think about that, yeah.
Yeah, so you have to have the right light. So this is literally the first light of the day coming up, hitting the skyline, hitting the guy on horseback. Like that light hitting his face is the first rays of sunshine of that day, which is important because that's the best light for me. Even if it's black and white, it still gives me the most depth to edit within and create in detail, and it's also soft enough to where nothing is blown out and too harsh.
You're not showing up with light kits and like
crews
and things like that. Like you're literally just like, let's go get this shot.
And so, long story short, I called every single person I knew in Dallas trying to see if anybody knew a cop, because Dallas was saying that in order for me to do this, I needed a permit. Not because I was riding the horse. They're like, we don't care if you ride the horse on that bridge, but because you're filming it, you have to have a permit.
Okay.
Long story short, priorities, I guess. Yeah. Long story short, the permit process takes 3 weeks and I didn't get a permit. So I'm calling all these people hoping I can find a cop that's friendly that wants to come help me. Just close it down for 20 minutes. Yeah. I'm going cop to cop, knocking on their windows, Brian, saying, hey, I've got this crazy idea. Please come help me. And they're like, dude, you're fucking crazy. Like,
how did you find somebody that was down? Like, what? Who said they would come help?
Total blessing, total God thing. I canceled the photo shoot at 5 p.m. the night before.
Uh-huh.
I said, hey, guys, I haven't been able to find anybody to help me close the bridge down. We cannot do this without the bridge closing down. Because if the horse freaks out, if a car drives by and throws the rider or throws the horse over the bridge, they're dead. I'm sued. My business is over.
This is downtown Dallas.
This is downtown Dallas, like middle of downtown. And so a really good buddy of mine, circling all the way back to how this whole world we're living in is all interconnected, owns the fly shop in Dallas.
Okay.
And he was like, hey, man, there's a freaking fireman that comes in here. And I've already told him about the idea. I don't think he can do it, but he's super nice. Here's his number. Maybe you can. And so I call him. And the guy's like, dude, Knox, it's such a cool idea, but I can't close that bridge down, man. It's just too big of a bridge. Like, no freaking way. And I'm like, no, man, it's this little bridge right next to it. All I need is 20 minutes. That's it. Yeah. And he's like, there's like a pause on the phone. And, you know, it's like kind of like that suspenseful moment in a movie where he's like, and he just goes, fuck it, I'll see you at 6 a.m. You got 20 minutes.
You got 20 minutes. Look at that. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So literally, and then the next morning, though, I show up at 5. Horses show up at 5:45. It's not light until like 6:51, I think, if I remember correct. So we're sitting there for an hour in the dark. Fireman's not there. It's 6:30. Fireman's not there. Lights in 20 minutes. We got all the horses, everything ready. We're like, holy shit.
Like, what if he doesn't show up?
Yeah, what if he doesn't show up? Like, he said he would, but what if he doesn't? Like, we're already here. 6:40. Holy shit. 6:45. He rolls up. He's like, I'm so sorry. There was a fire last night. I've been on call. We're like, holy shit, man. No worries. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, that was an actual fire.
Yeah. And he's like, I almost didn't come. And then he whips the fire truck around, throws out a bunch of cones, closes the two lanes. We ride the horse out, rear him up 5 or 6 times. They're like, did you get the photo? And I'm like, I think so. I hope so. And he's like, good, we got to get the hell out of here. And we load the horse trailer and we roll.
I can't believe that, man. Show me. Yeah. What about some of the new stuff?
Yeah.
Can you show any of that?
So the new stuff I'm working on is a whole new series. It's basically, I want to take these iconic landscapes that everybody knows and create unique imagery in front of them that may have happened 200 to 10,000 years ago. It's kind of the idea.
Yeah. Just lost in time kind of a thing. Like, you don't know, you don't know when this could be.
Totally. And so this first one is, this is in front of a mountain called Mount Sopris in Aspen.
Whoa, and so dude. And you're on this mountain. Like, this is not, there's no green screen.
There's no bullshit around this. Yeah, there's no green screen. And so this is an old trapper coming out with his wolf pelt and his elk antlers and his axe. He's coming out of the mountains down into the valley to come trade, right, with whoever. And then that's Mount Sopris in the background, which is the second most photographed mountain in Colorado behind Maroon Bells. Mm-hmm. And is this really, really awesome location. That shoot could not have been more chaos. Every idea I had rented 3 snowcats. I had a Forest Service permit. I had all of this stuff lined up to go shoot in front of Maroon Bells. But it snowed 20 inches the day we got there.
I was going to say, there's so much fresh powder.
Yeah, yeah. We couldn't do it. For 3 days, we stayed in Aspen hoping that we could see enough light to see the mountain tips.
So there was, I was going to ask you about that too, because like snow screws up all your light, right? Because it's reflecting totally. Everything. Doesn't matter if like you've got perfect conditions, like everything's blown out, right?
Well, so yes and no. And I actually kind of like it. I like, there's some images that are completely blown out besides the main character, which is kind of fun because it simplifies it. But what made it really difficult is the clouds were so low that whole 4 days that we were there that we couldn't see this mountain for 4 days. There was 15 minutes of enough light to get that shot. Like, we had 15 minutes and 4 day window that we just happened to be ready for. Like, it was awesome.
The adrenaline, like the frustration has to set in, and like the adrenaline has to set in when it's about to be right. And then it's just constant up and downs, right?
It's crazy because it literally happened in the sense that, like, if the film comes out when we finish it correctly, it's like, first day, we got some okay stuff. Second day, we got some okay stuff. Third day, we got some okay stuff. Fourth day, final day of shooting, we go to the Bells. It doesn't work. We try and shoot in front of what's called Pyramid Peak. It doesn't work. We go and shoot in Aspen at this place called Kemosabe. We get some fairly cool stuff there. And then we go and try and shoot in these aspen trees up the valley, but the snow's 7 feet deep and we can't get the horses in there. So it's like, in that one day, we had 3 shots that we tried to get that all failed. And I'm like, oh my God, like, these aren't cheap days, by the way. Like, I've got a full on production crew there. I've got cowboys, I've got horses, I've got people helping. Like, every day that I don't get a shot is, it's just a freaking big chunk of money. Just burning. It's like literally light it on fire, buddy. Yeah. And so we go back to this ranch where we've been set up the whole time. And we're like, man, the clouds look like they're kind of breaking. Maybe this afternoon we'll see it. This is the last afternoon of shooting. Like, if it doesn't happen now, it doesn't happen at all. And we get everybody set up and we're like, I was like, look, guys, let's just ride into the field anyways, just on the hope and a prayer. I want to make sure we're ready just in case we get that smidge of light and go time. Yeah. And it was an hour to sunset. So it's like an hour and we don't have any light to shoot. Mm-hmm. 30 minutes, we don't have any light to shoot. And then it was like, boom, there's the peaks with the perfect light. Ride your horses right here. Shoot a shit ton.
Then
we got it. Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing.
Unreal. This whole series is insane.
Yeah, so this is a whole nother, this is kind of in my Echoes of the West series.
I need to be able to blow this up more. Hold on just a second. Can I make this bigger on my screen? The detail in here is insane.
Oh, the detail's unbelievable.
This is like a poker game?
Yeah, and so the idea is I have this whole series called Echoes of the West, and I want to create this thought-provoking imagery that makes you think about like what could have happened in the West, right? Like, the West is this wild, wild West, and it's this mythical place where lawlessness and cowboys and Indians and all this stuff clashes. And I wanted to create a photo that kind of tied into that old scene, but also kind of like in the newer world, if you see all these, you know, you got all these lights and Bud Light, Budweiser and all that, it's in a newer bar, but it kind of plays into the fact that there's always like the, to me, the theme of this photo is there's always a bullshitter at the table.
There you go.
Like, if you don't know who it is, it's probably you. And I love that none of the Cowboys are looking at the bullshitter because they're like, I got to focus right here if I'm going to win this game. Yeah. And they then you got the long, and you got the Longhorn with his cards. And all of these characters are such interesting.
How did you
people.
Get the bull to behave? It looks like the bull is posing.
So I don't know. So the gentleman right here behind him, mm-hmm. and then the gentleman to his right, if you're looking at the photo, those guys are brothers. It's Mo and Joe, and Mo and Joe own the Longhorn, and his name is Ben, and he's gentle as can be.
Gentle Ben.
And Gentle Ben, we rode him in. Of course, he poops everywhere in the bar.
Inside the bar.
Yeah. Literally the first 2 seconds he's in the bar, he stops and poops, and we're all like, oh.
Just piles one up.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, Brian, like, I have these ideas, and I'm like, man, how hard is it going to be to really bring a Longhorn into a bar? Like, let's do it. When that Longhorn walked into the bar, my first thought was, holy shit, this is real life. Like, he's huge.
Yeah. Monster animal inside a very confined space. You suddenly smell him. You suddenly sense him. You suddenly feel him. Like, he's a monster.
Yeah. And I guess one of the things that we haven't talked about with all this art is I sell it really, really big. So the smallest size I sell anything at is 70 inches. And the largest is 100 plus. So this photo is really neat. And then depending on what kind of format you're looking on it on your phone or on your computer, whatever it is, right? Like, it's cool. But when you see it 100 inches long, it is amazing. Like, there's so much depth to it, whether it's the guy in the background smoking a cigarette, all of their eyes, the cards, the table, the guns, the money on the table, like the pool playing in the background, the musician, like, there's so much depth that you can literally look at this photo for 2 hours and always find something.
And you capture it. That's the insane thing. And I love the site too. I got to shout out,
at
Leverage for, they just did an insane job with your website. Can you pull that up again so everybody can see it? We got to show that thing off.
I think they won a bunch of awards for it too, which is awesome. So the website, it's just beautiful, man. You got this endless scroll kind of showing you a bunch of the different photos we've done. And they all, when you hover over them, they tell you the title, The Last Stand. You got Serengeti King here. And then you get to come over. And one of the big things is I like having depth and meaning into everything. So this kind of tells you what each of the series means and what each of the series stands for. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to come over here and click on them, you get to click on Gray Horse. You get to see the photos printed and framed so you can understand what the final product looks like. And then you get to watch this video of me telling you the behind the scenes story, plus the write up, plus imagery from the behind the scenes kind of showing you how we created it. It's really awesome.
Bringing in the story component is insane. And I think that's the cool thing that you've talked about, like the community aspect, like what you've tried to do with your collectors and like your vision for like the people that will invest in your art and things you want to, the ways you want to like bridge the gap between the art and the actual people. I think it's so cool, man.
The idea is a lot of artists, when the art goes on the collector's wall, that's the end of the relationship. For me, I want that to be the beginning of the relationship. And I have these unique abilities through connections around the world from my past experiences and past business endeavors that I have these cool outdoor experiences that we can go do. And the only thing that everybody there will have in common is they're all collectors of my art. So next year I'm taking 10 of my collectors to go heli skiing for 2 days. And the only thing they have in common is going to be that they've bought art from me, which is fantastic.
Bro, I love that idea. Like I feel like, so you think about photography and you mentioned this before, there are a lot of people that can rent a studio and there are a lot of people that can buy the gear and there are a lot of people that can sort of facsimilate like a decent image. Like they can create something under the right conditions. Every one of these pieces that you're creating is, it's so compelling because it's so like, once you understand what it takes to put it together, you realize that it's not just like it's this perfect image captured in chaos. Like there's this
whole, such an awesome way to put it.
There's this whole story around it and you don't shy away from that component. Like, I will tell you the story. I will let you in on the secret. And not only that, like if you're somebody who wants to buy one of my pieces, like you're part of the family, I will take you
on one of these adventures. Like the next thing that I go, if you want to go make stories of your own, like, let's go. I've got the places and we'll go do it. That's such an experience. Like, it's such a, so different from any other piece of art that you're going to buy.
I hope so, man. I think that you and I talked about this the other day, but in my opinion, well, not in my opinion, in a super crazy smart Charles Koch of Koch Industries, he's got this philosophy that the sole reason for business to exist in society is to create value for others. Like, my goal within the art is to create value for my collectors. Mm-hmm. I don't want the only value I'm creating for them to be the art piece. I want to find other ways to create value for them that is meaningful and helpful to their lives. That's the whole goal.
I love it, man. 150%.
That's the goal, baby. We'll see how it goes. Yeah.
Dude, the art is beautiful. Where can everybody check this out? I'll put the URL up on the screen.
Totally. I mean, so the URL is just going to be knoxcronenberg.com, and then social media is just Knox Cronenberg.
They find you on Instagram?
Yep. Yeah. Just Knox at Knox Cronenberg, I think, is literally my Instagram name.
That's it. It'll all be flashing on the screen right there. And, and I mean, obviously, Knox is not friendly or fun, so don't seek him out or send him a DM or anything, because he's not a nice guy. Or if you do, you very well could end up like closing down a bridge or up on top of a mountain, having an adventure yourself. So check out his art. It's insane. It's such a privilege to know you, man. It makes me happy every time we get to catch up. And I really thank you for stopping by, taking the time.
Dude, heck yeah. Grateful you asked me to be on here, man. What a cool experience. I love catching up and BSing with you. It's a blast. Like, you're the man. I appreciate you. Happy and looking forward to working together again soon.
Let's do it, man. Well, thank you so much for your time. I'm going to let you go here. And, bro, I'll get over to Austin soon. We'll have some fun.
Come on. Yeah, please. Come on.
All right, buddy.
Adios.
Take care. Bye, everybody.
All right, go ahead and bookmark this episode for the next time you need to get inspired. I am grateful for Knox and people like him who bring so much passion and energy to the table in everything that they do. Be sure to check back next week. I'll be talking to Hunter Hammonds about the next chapter of Assembly. You won't want to miss it. So be sure to subscribe to this podcast, because it helps me produce more episodes and expand the reach so more people can check it out. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. I'm Brian Athey, and I'll see you next time.